Howdy, neighbors. Ron Hayes here on the OklahomaFarmReport.com. Had the opportunity to talk in recent days with Dr. Brett Carver, who's the chairman this year of the National Wheat Improvement Committee. Of course, Dr. Carver is the principal wheat breeder at Oklahoma State University and the Plant and Soil Science Department at OSU's Division of Agriculture. And Dr. Carver, really at the cutting edge of a lot of things that are going on as far as wheat breeding is concerned. We had the opportunity to visit with him at Commodity Classic in Nashville.
Now, as a wheat breeder, you're seeing that your particular profession kind of change as we've gotten a lot more private players starting to come to the table in addition to our traditional land-grant system.
That's correct, and it's a welcome change to see that. And having been in the wheat genetics and wheat breeding business now since 1985, I've seen these ups and downs and swings in different directions. This one seems to have a little bit more momentum than what I've ever seen before. Just seeing what Bayer Crop Science has done in the last month, it's pretty amazing, but the other companies as well. So I'm looking forward to the innovation that's going to be coming available, not only to scientists, but to farmers. We're all trying to help out and contribute.
When we think about the private sector, as far as these companies are concerned, plus, you know, the land grants that you obviously are representing, as you try to interact back and forth, wheat obviously is a different animal in that the germplasm up to this point has been pretty freely shared.
Correct, and we want to continue that sharing. I think it is absolutely essential for our, and when I say our, I mean private and public, our future well-being. That we'd be able to share the fruits that we produce and the fruits that we consume, and that is the germplasm. Now we are in an environment where, and I like to consider it, instead of free and open, it's more free and responsible. It's more free and managed. In an IP world, that's the way it goes. It's just a more managed environment. So I have to become more accountable in the germplasm I use and the germplasm I share. I'm more accountable to those who write my check, basically. But I'm also accountable to the farmers, you know, for them to be able to capitalize on new genetic gains. They need that new germplasm that's put together in a package that represents something new compared to what was there yesterday. This is one area that I'm a little bit nervous about, to be quite honest, because I think our program, whether it's Oklahoma State University or private programs, are going to have to keep this concept of germplasm exchange front and center. When we start fractionating that germplasm pool, it becomes more difficult to manage.
Right. You know, obviously the interest of a lot of these companies up front is this idea of moving towards some sort of a genetically modified wheat. I know that's still several years out in the future, but just their interest has changed even just ordinary or conventional breeding, right?
Yes, there is that long-range vision for the GM solution. But I think everybody realizes that's not going to be the only solution. There are so many tricks in our basket, I think, now that we didn't have just 10 years ago. That we now have, that we don't necessarily have to put all our marbles in that one basket. We at Oklahoma State University and others at other land-grant universities will look to that transgenic option, the GM option, or cisgenic, and there's lots of different ways of going about how you describe it. But with the advent of molecular genetics now, and we're really just, you know, we're kind of jumping on the bandwagon of Human Genome Project, human genetics, and using that technology, that has really made a difference in the way we can breed wheat. That, I think, translates into better varieties just as much as the GM solution will 5 to 10 years down the road.
So are some of these techniques helping you be able to turn around and meet a problem quicker?
Oh, almost definitely. We still have a long ways to go, but we are now using DNA information instead of field information to make selections that I would have never even dreamed of just 10 years ago. One trait that we're really learning how to figure out is, we talk about this in Oklahoma all the time, is first hollow stem. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very hard to predict simply going out to the field. Now, we can measure it, but we cannot necessarily predict it. And with the use of molecular markers, in addition to that field information we've collected all these years, we have a much better predictive system. And we are using it, believe me, we are using it.
Okay. You know, we're seeing a lot of the land grants partner up with one company or another. I think the most recent announcement was Texas AgriLife, or A&M, with Blue Bear.
That's correct.
And, you know, what's in the future on OSU? Are we going to, you know, not do a deal? Are we going to try to do deals? Where are we?
We are advancing forward with our eyes wide open. We're not going through this with tunnel vision. We are looking and exploring all options that are out there. We have not made any commitments, I can tell you that right now. That doesn't mean we won't make any commitments. What we want to do, though, is to be able to capitalize on innovation that we cannot access, also allow somebody who does not have access to germplasm that we do to perhaps marry those two properties. Until that day comes, we're going to continue on like we have in the past, utilize the best technology we can come up with on our own, and hopefully help the Oklahoma wheat farmer.
Let's talk about a couple of things that specific to your program. You've got two new varieties that have been announced in just the last several weeks. Tell me about the new varieties.
Really, really exciting. Anytime we have something new to talk about, of course, that's very exciting. Not to forget the most recent successes in the past, that being Garrison and Ruby Lee. Don't want to slight those at all, because I'm still very excited about those new varieties, and those are coming out in terms of seed availability this year. Mm-hmm. But Gallagher and Iba represents we talk about 3G and 4G. Well, this is Duster 2G, basically. It's the next generation of Duster. And I have spent a lot of time up here in the old noggin trying to think just how we utilize the advantages of Duster without wearing out the advantages of Duster, wearing out the sense of putting taking genes from Duster and making them ineffective. And I'm not talking about disease in this case. I think we have a couple of varieties that continue those Duster strengths in a way that I think they're going to be around quite a while. They're so different that there was no way to decide one over the other. Mm-hmm. And they're so complementary that we thought that we better come up with a name that would connect these two varieties, so that when you hear one name, you will automatically think of the other and you start comparing the two. And that's what I want our wheat growers to think about, is how can one of these varieties best serve them? You have to compare them to figure out which one best serves, and that's why we came up with this complimentary name of Gallagher and Iba.
I know that one of the things, I'm not sure which it was, but you've got some really exciting forage results on at least one of these two varieties.
Yeah. Boy, now you talk about a trait that we need a lot of help on as far as prediction. We're looking in that area. We're not there yet, and we have attempted to use DNA markers to do that, but that's not really answering your question. Yes, the preliminary evidence on Iba indicates it has very good forage production. That's not the total package, however. We don't need just total forage production. We need the ability to produce forage and bounce back from the consumption of that forage.
Once we pull the cattle off.
That's right, once we pull the cattle off. And I think Iva may have a little bit of an edge over Gallagher in that respect. Still, I don't have enough information to say that conclusively. We'll just look to the wheat variety trials now over the next couple of years and try to figure that out for sure. Iba has that fertile stem pattern of development, much like Duster, and it has that rebound and grazing recovery, much like Duster. Gallagher is just a much earlier variety, although it seems to have some pretty good grazing tenacity for an early variety.
Right.
That's why we couldn't pass it up.
So this obviously, with them being released, we're going to start the seed production in earnest this coming growing season, right?
Actually, we started that seed production in earnest in 2011, anticipating a possible release, not knowing for sure that it would happen. Sure enough, it did happen. So we are well on the way. I think Iba will have more seed available than Gallagher, simply because we had to go back and tweak Gallagher a little bit more and clean it up. But this year, there should be, barring any, let's hope, no disasters are out there, there should be plenty of foundation seed available.
And going back to that daddy, Duster, that's one of those things that has been quite a variety for the OSU arsenal.
It has. You know, it took so long to come up with it. That was a 16-year project. And it's so good to see that 16-year project pay off for the benefit of Oklahoma wheat producers. So we want to try to continue that momentum, and again, without wearing it out, because you can only rely on a variety so much. And we go back to the example of Jagger. It's a very good one. I think we used that genetics and possibly overused it. I don't want to do the same thing with Duster.
Dr. Brett Carver, wheat breeder at Oklahoma State University and currently the chairman of the National Wheat Improvement Committee. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.